I want to thank all of those who greeted and wined and dined her and helped her out. And so, indeed, a successful a docking, I guess you would say, in the boat world, in Hilo, Hawaii. What an undertaking for a 72-year-old lady. Just absolutely incredible. Something I would not do. My webcam shows yet another fire here in Pahrump 2 days ago. The photograph you see on my webcam is one taken by Jim, a friend of mine who happened to be up here. We went to the scene and took photographs, hoping to keep others away. Didn't work. There were tons of people there. You can see the cars, the rubberneckers, but it was a serious fire and points to a serious issue here in the desert. And I'm going to say it again. We have had an extremely unusual weather year in the desert. We've had a great deal of water during the winter season. The weeds have grown high. The fire danger now extreme. And homeowners have got to get out all over the desert, not just Pahrump, but all over the desert, and trim these weeds back. You may be saving your own house. So that's a picture of yet another fire that got out of control. Fortunately, I don't think taking with it any structures, but trees and, of course, weeds driven by the wind, a very serious situation. Weather-wise, it has been a strange spring. And I suspect that there are those of you out there who could confirm that for me. Across the middle part of the U.S., there is the Visalia lightning map. You can go and monitor, as I do, on a daily basis, the lightning strikes across America, the number of lightning strikes, the density, the area encompassed. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the Visalia lightning map right now, you will see lightning virtually from the state of Texas straight up in a line to Wisconsin, Michigan, that area. In other words, traversing the entire central part of the U.S. I mean, just a line of vicious storms. The night before last, we monitored, I happened to look up Sonora, Texas, I think it was. I was watching a line of thunderstorms crossing. A very big one, and I simply picked one town out, Sonora, Texas, and they had supercells, what they're calling supercells building, with tornadoes. Just before airtime tonight, I got the following. Well, Art, it's happening. Never before in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, have we been under a tornado watch and warning all day long. All my life, I was told this could never happen here. We're too close to the mountains. They were wrong. So the radio is absolutely filled with static from the violent storms that are going on out across Middle America. And they've been going on just about on a daily basis. And they're more, certainly, I think, more violent than any spring that I can remember, just raging across the central part of the U.S. So it seems to me we are in the middle of some sort of change. What do you think? More in a moment. The last part of that commercial, do you think a human being actually said all of that quickly? Or do you think that it was electronically perhaps altered? How would you like to? You know, Americans are not going to like this. They're not going to like this one bit. But in Britain, they're going to perhaps have to begin paying for their driving by the mile. British motorists face paying a new charge for every single mile they drive. In a revolutionary, and I think probably very unpopular scheme to be introduced within 2 years, drivers will pay according to when and how far they travel throughout the country's road network under proposals being developed by the government. Alistair Darling, the What a darling. The Secretary of State for Transport revealed that pilot areas will be selected in just 24 months' time, as he made clear his determination to press ahead with the national road pricing scheme. Each of Britain's 24 million vehicles would be tracked by satellite if a variable pay-as-you-drive charge should replace the current road tax. In an interview with The Independent on Sunday, Mr. Darling warned that unless action is taken now, he says, the country could face gridlock within just two decades. Official research suggests the national road pricing could increase the capability of Britain's network by as much as, say, 40% at just a single stroke, he said. The rapid uptake of satellite navigational technology in cars is helping to usher in the new pay-as-you-drive charge much sooner than they had hoped. God, people are going to hate this. So in other words, if I'm getting this straight, and I am, every single vehicle will be tracked by satellite. And kind of like the meter that sits beside your house or apartment and races around, adding up the amount of electricity you use, this little baby in your car would report to a satellite, which would then report to the government, which would then tax you for every single mile you drive. And of course, if it turns out to be a gigantic revenue producer, the United States, you just know, is not going to be far behind. Can you imagine paying? How would you go along with that? Having a satellite tracking device implanted in your car? I mean, we're talking about all of Great Britain now. And then the government tracking where you go, how many miles you go, and charging you per mile. World news. Hundreds of Iraqi and U.S. troops searched fields and farms Saturday for insurgents and their hideouts in an area south of Baghdad known for attacks, and the Marines said they discovered 50 weapons and ammunition caches and a huge underground bunker west of the capital fitted out with air conditioning, a kitchen, and showers. So apparently the insurgents don't have it so bad. Air-conditioned insurgency, only in 2005, huh? Three men who said they dropped off an Alabama teenager, this is a big story right now, at her hotel. About 18-year-old girl, beautiful girl, emerged as the most important lead in the honor student's disappearance on this Dutch Caribbean island, Aruba. According to police, Dutch troops, hundreds of volunteers scouring the coastline and beaches for 6 days found not even a trace of Natalie Holloway, 18. A Pentagon report detailing incidents in which U.S. guards at Guantanamo Bay, a prison, desecrated the Quran is creating yet another, here we go again, another public relations challenge for our president. 2 weeks ago, the White House was thrown on the defensive by a now-retracted Newsweek report alleging that U.S. interrogators at the detention center for alleged terrorists in Cuba had flushed a Quran down the toilet. A car plunged off a bridge early Saturday, burst into flames, killing five men in suburban Milwaukee. The car was traveling south on Interstate 794 about 3 in the morning, didn't stop at the end of the freeway, which is an off-ramp to Layton Avenue. According to a police department news release, the car went across Layton Avenue, smashed through a cement barrier and then a fence on a bridge and fell 40 feet to the gravel road below being constructed as an extension to the interstate. Car burst into flames. Singer Rod Stewart, you heard about this, has filed for divorce from actress Rachel Hunter, citing, of course, irreconcilable differences. Hunter, 35, and the veteran British rocker were married in 1990 but split in 99. Court documents filed Thursday show. Hunter originally filed for divorce in 2003 but later withdrew her request for unspecified reasons. Now, the next story, you're going to be able to go to coasttocoastam.com and read about it yourself. But you just had to know I would be all over this story. It's from The Guardian. And I think it's one of the most exciting things, short of going to the moon, that the world has, I say the world, has ever undertaken to do. Japanese scientists are to explore the center of the Earth. Now, right there, you know you've got me. I've been a center of the Earth kind of guy for a long time, dying to know what's down there, and I don't think they've really quite got it right. You know, they think it's going to be very hot. Well, we'll see. Using a giant drill ship launched next month, the researchers aim to be the very first to punch a hole into the rocky crust that covers our planet and to reach the mantle below. Now, if you look carefully on the Coast to Coast AM site, you'll see a sort of a pie or ball, if you will, breakaway example of what they're going to be doing. The team wants to retrieve samples from the mantle 6 miles down to learn more about what triggers undersea earthquakes, you know, like the one off Sumatra, for example, that caused the Boxing Day tsunami. They hope to study the deep rocks and the mud for records of past climate change. And to see if the deepest regions of the Earth could perhaps harbor life. Ashiko Taira, Director General of the Center for Deep Earth Exploration in Yokohama near Tokyo, said, quote, "One of the main purposes of doing this is finding deep bacteria within the ocean crust and the upper mantle. We believe that there has to be life. It's the same mission as searching for life on Mars. Rocks in the upper mantle produce compounds essential for life when they react with seawater. This is a system which we believe created early life. There may be a chance that we can catch the origin of life still taking place today." The 57,000-pound, 500-ton drill ship is, sounds like science fiction, right? Is being prepared in the southern port of Nagasaki now, two-thirds the length of the Titanic. It is fitted with technology borrowed from the oil industry, but of course, that will allow it to bore through 7,000 meters of crust below the seabed while floating in 2,500 meters of water, requiring a drill pipe 25 times the height of the Empire State Building. The deepest hole drilled through the seabed thus far has reached about 2,111 meters. After final sea trials this year, the scientists will set sail for the deep Pacific, where the Earth's crust is thinnest. Drilling is expected to begin next year. It could take more than a year to drive through miles of crust and reach the mantle, so the ship is fitted with 6 rotating thrusters, controlled, get this, folks, by GPS satellites, to keep it directly over the hole. The drill is surrounded by a sleeve that contains a shock-absorbing chemical mud, and a blowout valve will protect it should the team strike, say, oil or a superheated amount of rock in the crust. The project is part of an international effort called the Integrated Ocean Drilling Program, which also involves the U.S. and Europe. Shinichi Kurumoto, one of the Yokohama team, said that GEIKI's main objective is to retrieve mantle samples for analysis. Quote, "Humans have brought back lunar rocks to understand the universe, yet we have never reached the mantle, which accounts for most of Earth." Previously undiscovered bacteria that can survive the anticipated 100-degree centigrade temperatures of the upper mantle, we'll see, right, could be useful on the surface. Heat-proof enzymes isolated from bugs brought back by earlier Japanese drill missions are now used, for example, in washing powders. Cores of rock and sediment from the so-called earthquake nest, where the mantle meets the crust, is that like where the rubber meets the road, could also help geologists understand seismic events and perhaps give more warning. We can estimate how frequently marine sliding or earthquakes occur from learning the history of Earth, but we still don't know when they will occur in the future. We take cores to better understand the mechanisms involved. Sensors placed in the borehole could detect changes in strain, tilt, and pressure in the ground miles below the surface. That'll be a great advantage in giving us a few hours or days warning before something really bad happens. Current warning systems in Japan only warn us 10 minutes before a large earthquake strikes. We need real-time data from the exact point. So they're going to drill into the core, the middle of our Earth. And, oh, I wonder about all kinds of things. I wonder, for example, if it's really what we think it is down there. We have a clue, we have ideas, but we don't really know because we've never been there, and we don't really have anything that'll read that far down and tell us very much about what's really down there. Oh, we have ground penetrating this and that, but not that far. I mean, this is really going down into the middle of the Earth. I think it's so exciting, and I don't know why. I kind of wonder about that. I've always been absolutely fascinated, not as much with what's above us, although going to the Moon and Mars, all of that, very exciting, but we don't know what's below us, what we walk around on all the time. Could there be a lost world? Could there be life? Well, yes, that's probable. There probably is life. Maybe beyond what we can even imagine, beyond what we can even guess at. Who's to say? Here's a headline for you. Snowfall in Somalia reported. Now, you don't see this every day. The first snowfall ever on this part of the world has claimed one life and caused extensive damage to properties. The northeastern part of Somalia has never awakened and found snowfall. They had storms with high winds, homes were destroyed, and it left a blanket of snow on the ground, and people in Somalia have never, ever experienced snow, ever. Floods killed people, forced rivers to overflow their banks in almost all parts of the country. Many cities from the north to the central portion were affected badly by heavy clouds, rains, floods. Many people were killed, thousands of livestock washed away by this, their word, strange weather. The country is still struggling to recover from last month's killer weather. With no effective central government, Somalia does not have weather prediction or climate monitoring systems in place at all. Somalians think this unusual weather and last night's previously unheard of snowfall are part of the global warming phenomenon. They don't know, but that's what they think. How many of you think that? I'm telling you right now, you have to look no further than the center of our own country. Now, yes, we have always had violent weather in the spring. That's nothing new. What is new is the amount of the violent weather we're having. And I'm telling you, monitor it for yourself. Go to the Visalia weather or lightning map page, and there you can see the density, the frequency, the violence of the amount of lightning that we're getting. And all this spring, all across America, it has been absolutely unprecedented, in my opinion. I watch it day to day, week to week, month to month, and year to year. I watch it very carefully because it affects our radio communication, obviously. The more lightning going on, even 1,000, 2,000 miles away, the more affected radio communications is. And lightning is an electromagnetic pulse that travels through the ionosphere, very much like radio waves. So when there's a whole lot of lightning, we have a whole lot of static on the radio. And believe me, right now we have a whole lot of static on the radio. So I'm watching this entire spring out across the central U.S. very carefully. And I would guess if I were to ask some of my audience out there, they would tell me they've seen some pretty wild weather out across Texas, Oklahoma, all the usual locations, as well as a lot of locations that are not so usual. And in the usual locations, it's been considerably more violent than usual. Good morning across this great land. First time caller line, you are on the air. Hi.
Good morning. I love the show.
Thank you.
I have a question about the universe. It's a theory of mine. I don't think it's just unique to me. I was wondering if maybe you could shed some light if there was any other research done on it. But you know how the universe is infinitely large and it's supposed to be infinitely small? Is it possible that it's just repeating itself, that the atoms make up planets and planets make up something larger and that makes up something even larger, and that would go on infinitely?
Well, of course, yes, I do. And yes, of course, it is possible. They don't have the answer, and I guess that makes your theory as good as any.
Well, do you know of anyone that's done any research on that?
Well, I mean, people like Brian Greene, that I had on last week, for example, that's what they do. But they are theoretical physicists, right? Michio
right.
Kaku, theoretical physicist, which means it is theory at this point. So we don't know the answer to all of that. You could be right.
Okay, but there's no way to find out for sure, right?
Not at this point, sir. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, we'd all like to know. I mean, that is indeed what they're searching for. I believe they call it the theory of everything, right? I keep wondering what impact there would be, and I ask the most brilliant minds around, and they say, well, none immediate. We would simply know the theory of everything, how it all began. That would not necessarily change the price of gas on the corner. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Just a quick weather update for me here in Western New York. We've had virtually no severe thunderstorms yet this season, and it's to the point where the local meteorologists are commenting on it.
What's happening is places that normally get them are not. Places that, like up in Canada, for example, they're not used to being under the threat of tornadoes. All of this is shifting.
I find it very surprising because usually by this time we're at June 5th and we've had very few thunderstorms in the area. And as I said, it's to the point now where the local meteorologists are actually making a note of it.
Yeah, what's wrong?
We haven't had rain, and now they're actually talking about we need rain. The farmers' fields are dust at this point.
On the other hand, I live roughly 20 miles from Death Valley, sir, and, you know, that's famous for not having a whole lot of rain, but this year we were inundated. That's what I'm saying. Things are sort of shifting.
Thank you, Art.
You're very welcome, sir, and we should all watch it very carefully. I know we're frogs in water that is slowly warming to a boil, and it's very difficult to see what actually is going on around us. But indeed, it is. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Dave from College Station, Texas.
Yes, sir.
And I had a couple of things. One was on the weather. Another was on the fuel situation.
Sure.
On the weather, one has to take all the information and put it together in order to form a practical theory.
Mm-hmm.
And one piece of information that most people don't know about because it's fairly recent is there is a man who started the science of quantum algebra. I believe his name is Dr. Days. He's a Russian.
Yes.
And he did a study on when the universe was most ordered, which would tend to, you know, because it's been decaying ever since, according to the laws of entropy, the second law of thermodynamics, things naturally decay.
Yes.
And he went backwards in time, and he did his calculations and submitted it to, I believe it was the National Mathematics Association or something like that. And his conclusions, you know, are verified by the you know, calculations that the universe had its most ordered state 6,000 some odd years ago, which corresponds virtually identical to the Bible. He was an atheist, and he's now a Christian. And the Academy sent the, you know, equations back to him, said, rework it, didn't make any statement. He reworked it, said, I can't change it, you know. And so it's accepted as it is, but it you know, confounds many people.
Well,
what that means...
Well, sir, do you believe that the world is only 6,000 years old?
I believe it's quite probable because of the evidence.
I could not disagree with you more. The evidence is exactly the opposite, sir.
Well, there are skeletons inside of coal mines, human skeletons, thousands of feet below the surface. They've found man-made tools and pins. You know, when they were digging the mines by hand, they found a lot of this stuff. There's actually a cave, I believe it's in Pennsylvania, but I'm not certain, that in the late 1800s, it's about 50 feet tall inside 1,200 feet down in a coal mine, and in the roof of it are human skeletons.
Proving?
Proving that man was there underneath this coal when it was formed, and it wasn't formed, you know, millions of years ago, according to that.
So,
but in any event, what this was leading up to, if this is the case, if the Earth is fairly young, then the ice has to be very young, and it's been melting ever since it deposited, which would have been probably about Noah's flood. And as it melts, you get more humidity surrounding the remaining ice, and that humidity zaps the cold out and transfers it to the warm and mixes them together and melts it out. It's like an ice cube. It looks pretty big for a long time, and when it gets to a certain size, it just disappears, you know, before your eyes.
All right. I appreciate it, but I think the Earth is far older. Man is far older than 6,000 years, and I think the evidence academically is simply absolutely overwhelming. Absolutely overwhelming, and I don't think that it's necessary that man necessarily interpret the Bible in such a literal fashion and demand that it simply cannot be any older than 6,000 years, not when the scientific evidence is so compelling that it's far, far older than that, and so are we. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir. Where are you in a truck?
I'm up here in lovely New York.
Lovely New York, okay.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to mention, I heard on the Open Road channel on my XM radio, the states were fixing on doing the road tax for cars here in the states. They're saying legislation-wise, they're trying to get that going over here now.
I believe it.
They do it for us in the trucks. You know, we pay our fuel road tax out here, and they're making it a point for people to call their representatives and voice their opinions as to whether or not they should go ahead and do the road tax.
Well, I'll give you an opinion right now. Hell no, they ought not do that. Americans are going to... I would be very upset. Not that I do a very great deal of travel, but when I do, I don't want some satellite tracking me and then charging me accordingly. Do you? So, not only no, but hell no. However, I'm sure this is the way the world is headed. Our children will know a very different world indeed. Wildcard line, you're on the air. No, you're not. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hello, is this for the East?
Yes.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
I wondered if about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, we weren't under a solar storm. Because of how my dish network was reacting?
Well, the answer is we have been in and out of solar storms for about the last 2 weeks, ma'am.
I could tell by my satellite. Oh, all right, I didn't know.
Now you do.
Yes, thank
all
you.
All right, take care. As a matter of fact, we had a period of time where the KPN index went all the way up to 9 and the auroral level up to 10. Which means that even in the far southern latitudes, the skies have been turning strange colors as our magnetic field is assaulted at a time in the 11-year sunspot cycle when it ought not be so assaulted. But then again, strange days, eh? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hello.
I have a theory about, you know, the Voyager spacecraft?
Yes.
Flying out there? I was playing with my Windows Media Player, and I went to cursor forward on it, and I accidentally hit in the middle of the screen, and I moved the whole window. And I remembered it was Einstein or Velikovsky who said that the planets revolve around the sun like in a groove, and like on a phonograph player.
Sort of, yes.
And those satellites are, well, like they're outside the window. And when those sun had those coronal mass ejections last year and in years past,
yes,
it blew the sun faster and took all the planets with it. But
that's an interesting theory. I don't know that, you know, it has any substance as in scientific backing, but it's an interesting theory. In other words, the planets are attached gravitationally to the sun, which is certainly true, and the sun actually moved or was propelled, in effect, by the coronal discharges. That's part of it. I have some doubt about that. I don't think that has occurred. Otherwise, his theory could conceivably be sound, because as goes the sun, so would go the planets that are magnetically attracted to it. So, interesting stuff. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Tim in Seattle.
Yes.
I just wanted to touch base. I had a friend in the, she's in the Air Force. She's an officer in the Air Force. And she had talked about a couple years ago about the Chinese plan to eventually, I guess this is a plan they came up with in the 70s on a 50-year schedule to come into North America forcibly. And because of the natural resources, they're going to be running out.
We don't have that many natural resources.
The Canadians do. And they.
Well, let them take Canada then.
I just wondered if you'd heard anything about that or.
No.
If there had been any discussion about that.
Not that I'm aware of. And I think that we would be very upset if the Chinese tried to take over here.
Probably so. All right, that's all I had. Thanks.
I mean, short of the economic takeover they've already accomplished. When you walk into a lot of, I'll leave them unnamed stores, why, it's nearly all Chinese, isn't it? What's going on in China is fascinating in more than one way, economically and from an industrial point of view. They are just absolutely a monster. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, where are you?
Miami, Florida.
Miami. All right.
Yeah.
And your first name?
Oh, Brian.
Brian. All right, Brian.
Well, I was kind of wondering, because I was listening to Brian Greene, and my brother just sent me the book like 4 days before he was on the air, so I just considered it fate.
Brilliant man.
Yeah, he is. And I was just wondering about his time travel theory. You know what? I was, in listening to the rebroadcast earlier tonight, I was just thinking that perhaps ghosts could be linked to this in a certain way, because if our DNA is linked temporally somehow, perhaps maybe traveling back in time is actually just us going back and seeing a shadow of something that has occurred either before or something that has already occurred in the future. And perhaps, you know, maybe we are either a shadow person or a ghost or something that transforms us into a different dimension.
I would suppose if the multiple dimension theory is correct, that we could appear to another dimensional reality as a shadow or just something seen quickly in the corner of the eye and only occasionally at that. I suppose so.
But we wouldn't be actually traveling. What we would be doing was, instead of folding space like they were looking for through wormholes, we'd actually simply be folding time and bringing time to us. Which is why we'd stay in the same dimension, yet the time would be brought to us, which would allow us to see something, yet not really interact with it.
Fascinating. Could be. He was certainly a fascinating guest, and he accounted for a very strange dream, really a strange dream that I had this week. I had a dream that you may recall Brian described what the end of the world might be like if we were approaching a black hole. And what I asked Professor Green was what we would actually begin to notice on Earth as we approached the event horizon. You know, if Earth were hurtling its way toward a black hole or the black hole toward Earth, I guess it wouldn't matter, would it, end result? And he described it, and my dream was pretty odd indeed. I remember the world around me beginning to virtually dissolve. I remember everything metallic, everything magnetic, being drawn up, hitting roofs, and simply like some giant magnet in the sky was drawing it up. And then eventually in my dream, biological entities began to stretch out. Like my cat Comet. I recall in the dream seeing my cat Comet stretching out, you know, that fur getting longer and longer. It was really pretty gory and evil in a way. It was the end of the world, and everything was being affected by this black hole at that point in my dream, involving regular organisms, like, you know, human and animal organisms. And it was bizarre, and I think I have Brian Greene to thank for that dream. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, yes. I'd like to speak to Art, please.
That would be me.
Oh, wow. Good evening, Art. How are you, sir?
Good evening. We don't screen call, so you just, boom, go on the air.
Well, that's great. I like that approach.
Me too.
I have a question for you. Maybe you can straighten this out for me.
Perhaps.
With this massive exportation of oil products to China, I'm curious, do these people not have any oil reserves? They don't have the technology to get it? Can you fill me in on that, maybe?
Well, I really can't. I'm not an expert in the area. I don't believe that China has many natural reserves. I know they've got their eye on the Spratly Islands, which are thought to have some reserves, and they're sending quite a bit of their military machinery into that area to sort of claim dominion over it. But in terms of mainland China, I don't think they've got great oil reserves, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I was really getting a little frustrated, and we were having a conversation the other day, and it's the price our gasoline's getting today, in 5 years at their current rate of consumption, we're going to be paying an enormous amount for a tank of gas. And I thought, for pity's sakes, why doesn't Exxon or somebody go over there and develop what they've got instead of shipping everything from here over there?
Well, there are quite a few oil reserves in Russia, and I know the major oil companies are, I believe, pursuing those. But again, I don't think China has much, so they're going to have to, and they are, in fact, now importing large amounts of oil, and the oil market in the world is exactly that, a world oil market. So they bid up the price because they want it, and they've got the money to pay for it since they've sold American consumers so much, and so we're now in competition for that same oil.
Yeah, it's a dirty, rotten shame. But okay, well, thanks a million, Art. Have a great evening.
One last thing, sir.
Yes.
As obviously you are a driver, how would you feel about having a little transponder in your car that went to the satellite and reported to the government the number of miles you drive every week, every year, and then charged you appropriately?
Well, actually, that would rub me the wrong way. Mm. However, technology already exists, and I'm not so sure it's not already in automobiles.